Listen to your heart, Joey. Listen to your heart. Comb your hair.
Hello, and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
I don't like books.
I don't like this book. Spoiler.
Me neither.
The things we do for love.
I like how Ben and I wait to read, like, the most best-selling books of all time, and then we're like, no, it's not good. 50 Shades of Grey sucks.
We might be snobs, Gabs.
Ready Player One, eh.
We might be.
The Alchemist has been on the bestseller list for, like, 242 weeks. And, yeah, shit, whatever.
It's been on the paperback bestseller list for, like, that long.
Yeah.
How long has it been on the hardcover list before that?
I don't know.
The book was, the original version was published in the 80s.
Yeah.
The English translation, I think, was early, mid-90s, something like that.
This version has been a bestseller for at least 5 years.
Yeah, it's been around a long time.
Yeah, that's basically why we chose to read it, because it's been a bestseller for so long, even though it's not recent, we decided it was worthy of the bestseller month.
Well, it's sold 20 million copies or something. I mean, it's definitely in the category of, like, all-time bestsellers.
Yeah.
Here's the copyright information. English version, 1993.
Man, it's older than I thought, too.
Yeah.
Well, I still don't like it.
Well,
not gonna change my mind.
For people who know us personally and have read the book, that probably won't surprise them too much. Did we say the name of the book?
No.
The book, by the way, is The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho.
Yeah, we looked up how to pronounce his name. We actually did some research.
That's right.
Like, that took 30 seconds.
Though I believe the English edition calls him Paul.
Yeah.
So you can probably pronounce the second name differently if you want.
But Paulo Coelho.
Paul Coelho.
Coelho. Paul Coelho. Yeah, it is a very short read. It's about 150 pages long, so Ben and I put it in the genre of inspirational. I know it's not really a genre of fiction, but it was the closest we could come for this one.
Yeah, I don't know what else you would call it. I mean, it's definitely not genre fiction. It's not romance or sci-fi or something like that.
And it's not really literature. Well, I mean, it is because it's a book, but it's not literary fiction.
The, like, literary fiction, I think, is used a lot of times as a catch-all for just fiction that isn't in a genre.
And we kind of use it for, like, classics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the book's purpose is, I think, to inspire you to go out and fulfill your dreams, so inspirational seems like as good a genre as any. And
I mean, when I was reading it, I was definitely thinking inspirational, motivational speaker.
Mm-hmm.
It's really what it reads like.
Yeah.
So if you're into that sort of thing, you can be one of the millions of people who love it.
Yep.
And if you're not, you can join us.
I mean, I think I read it in an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's too short to hate. This isn't going to be a full-fledged hate cast by any means, but
so I was just thinking in terms of, if you're curious, even if you don't like it, you're not, like, wasting a substantial portion of your life or anything.
Yeah, it's not going to put you out.
Might annoy you, but that's about it.
Yeah. So just because so many people have read this and there's not really anything to spoil. No spoiler alert, except what I just said. So, moving on.
What?
Unless you have some inane patter you want to add.
No.
Okay.
Plot synopsis. Let's speak the universal language at the soul of the world.
Yes, make sure you hear the capital UL in universal language and SW in soul of the world.
Yeah, as you go fulfill your personal legend, capital P, capital L.
Yes.
That is definitely a thing happening in this book.
Yep. Reminds me of Dr. Good Sir and The Terror. Not that we podcast that.
Nope, I haven't read it, so I don't even know what you're talking about. Ben.
He liked to capitalize. With him, it wasn't even like things that especially stood out. It was like random words would be capitalized in his diary for no good reason.
It's because people back then didn't know what writing was.
That's true. It amused me, that's all I'm saying.
So just a brief summary, I guess, if you haven't read it, even though the book's super short, won't take you long to read. It's based around this, teenager, late teens, early 20s. His name is Santiago. He's a shepherd in Spain, and he has a dream about treasure buried by the pyramids. So he, with the help of, you know, some guides along the way, he gets inspired to go look for it, crosses the ocean, ends up in Tangier, works at a crystal shop, helps sell some crystals, makes some money, joins a caravan traveling through the desert so he can get to the pyramids, ends up in Oasis, meets the woman he loves, goes to the pyramids, finds his treasure, blah blah.
Hooray! That's about
it. Essentially, a young man goes on a journey and then discovers treasure at the end of it. It fulfills his personal legend.
Right.
That's about all that
stuff. Yeah. The story takes place in Spain, as Gab's mentioned. He's a shepherd in Spain. North Africa, the city of Tangier, which we probably should have looked up while we were looking up how to pronounce Quelo.
Yeah.
But Morocco, Algeria, something like that. North Africa. The desert.
Yep.
An oasis somewhere in the desert. And Egypt, finally.
And the pyramids.
I actually do have a question about the setting that I forgot to bring up earlier.
Oh, yeah?
And that is, what year do we think this takes place in?
Oh, yeah. It has a distinctly old-timey feel, just because no one has, like, phones or computers, and there are no cars or anything like that. Because I'm pretty sure if you wanted to get to Egypt in the modern day, you'd just, like,
you'd board a flight.
Yeah, instead that of sort of thing.
Sailing 2 hours to Africa and trudging across the desert.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to agree.
It's after Jesus and Muhammad, because there are Christians and Muslims running around.
It's somewhere between the year 1000 and the year 1900, I'm guessing.
And an Englishman shows up, so I don't know, it's after the English.
All right, so that advances it. That several reduces hundred. The bottom end of that window by probably, what, 300 years, give or take?
Yeah, well, I actually kind of got the impression the Englishman was kind of like a, I don't know, Victorian type
scholar. I was going to ask,
scholar.
Like, I was thinking like a Lawrence of Arabia sort of window.
Yeah, now that I think about it, because he was studying books of alchemy from the alchemists who all lived in, you know, 14, 15, 1600s type deal. So it would have to be after that if he was a student of these older texts
All right.
that are supposed to reveal alchemy.
So we'll say somewhere between 1600 and 1900. How about that?
Yeah. Sounds reasonable.
As a rough sketch.
I would be tempted to put it more in the 1800 range, but that's just more of a feeling than actual evidence.
Right.
So I'm not going to say for sure. If they would have given us a hint to what the Englishman was wearing, I could pare it down even further.
There you go.
If he was in, like, the starched collar and the bloomers or the, you know.
I was kind of imagining, what do you call it? Just, like, khaki adventurer gear.
Yeah.
So I think I was kind of picturing a more Victorian-era guy
and
myself.
And the, like, wire-rimmed glasses. Uh-huh. And
no, that is exactly the picture I had. Yeah. The khakis and the glasses and the boots.
Yep.
And maybe one of those broad-brimmed hats that keeps the sun off your face.
It's good to know the explorer Englishman is a universal picture, apparently.
It's an archetype.
Yeah. Setting. Okay. I was like, where are we?
Yeah, well, what just happened?
The point of view tense is a third-person narrator. It's sometimes close around the characters, mostly around Santiago if it does bother to be close, but not all the time. And I would say more often it's an objective narrator that's just kind of omnisciently looking at.
Occasionally steps right behind someone's line of sight for a couple paragraphs. I've dubbed it close-nishant.
Yeah, which I really like. Sometimes close, sometimes omniscient. Close-nishant.
That's right.
So, the protagonist.
Santiago.
The shepherd boy.
Who frequently just goes by the boy.
Yeah. Not to be confused with the boy from the road.
Or totally to be confused with the boy from the road. Though the world's become a much happier place in...
Since he grew
the
up.
The 10 years since the road happened.
And his dad's and his mom are alive again or something? Yeah. And he's Spanish now? Maybe this is falling apart. So he was originally being raised to be a priest for seminary, because that's what you do with your non-firstborn sons.
Right.
Which also puts it in the past, I would say, since that's not really a thing anymore.
Right.
But at the age of 16, he decided that he didn't want to do that. He wanted to see the world, so he decided to become a shepherd and take his flock of sheep around.
Yeah, because shepherds get to travel.
Yeah.
I mean, especially, I suppose that's especially true in a time where traveling means wandering the countryside and not hopping a flight to anywhere on the planet.
Because otherwise you probably wouldn't want to really be a shepherd.
Yeah, it kind of works.
And he does. He gets to see things and explore and learn from his sheep, I guess.
Yeah, he seems to not mind being a shepherd.
But he is apparently meant for bigger things. And... I mean, I guess, what would you call his Santiago's main character trait?
He's a fast learner.
He is, that's true.
Is he the stereotypical job applicant? He's a hard worker who's enthusiastic and learns fast?
Oh, God. He totally is. Oh, no!
Oh, no.
He doesn't really have distinguishing characteristics. He's kind of an explorer at heart, I guess. He has some moments of hesitation about going and following his dreams, but it never really lasts for that long.
He has these little moments of insight every once in a while that are almost amusing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I get it. It's like sheep. Oh, but maybe the sheep were learning from me and I wasn't learning from the sheep, or I don't know, like it... almost teeters on the brink of a Princess Bride-esque observation a couple times, but never quite gets there.
Oh, I never noticed that.
Okay, well, I did.
I think you're reading into it.
No, I mean, I don't... Being that that was the mood that was being established, just the way it was phrased a couple times. I mean, the book is not humorous in the least.
No, it's written in a really simple style, and it's, yeah, it's not full of jokes or anything.
No, in fact, I might even say it's humorless.
And not like in a, it's, the narrator's a dick way.
Right.
But just in a very sincere, here's this boy's journey, here are some of his thoughts, here's him as he learns things, and then here's some people telling rando stories for you, so you know... things and Bible.
Right. I think I'm reading into it less and more like wanting just a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think that's more what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
And
that's the thing, is that in order to really discern too much about the boy's character, you kind of have to read into it, because he never really does anything to give him a personality.
He seems fairly direct.
Uh-huh.
But... that could just be the narration.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I closed this book when I finished it, and I kind of went, how are we going to talk about this?
Yeah.
There's not very much to talk about.
There's not a lot of characters. There's kind of one general idea, and then aside from that, I don't really know. I kind of had the same problem. But I guess we'll persevere. Keep trying.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, did you want to make any other comments on Santiago before I shift?
He learns how to become the wind.
That's true.
Which is like...
I have some respect for that.
Pretty cool.
He did it in a very mystical way.
He did.
And we'll get more on that subject in probably about 5 minutes tops. But do any of the other characters have anything about them we want to talk about? Do they have characteristics?
Well, you wanted to talk about the alchemist.
He was almost, like, I feel like if he was a character in a different story, he would have been a badass.
Yeah. That's what we're going to talk about. He's almost a really cool character.
Because, like, he knows all this stuff. He already knows how to become the wind, so he's not worried if they kill the boy because he can't become the wind, because he can become the wind.
He has the Philosopher's Stone.
So, he's good at alchemy.
he can turn lead into gold, and he has, like, a potion that makes you live forever, basically.
Right.
That he has control of it in the responsible way, where you don't run around telling everyone that you have control of it.
And he's just a very self-confident character, which appeals to me. You know, like, they get confronted by bandits, and they're like, "What's that thing you're holding?" And he says, "Oh, well, this is the Philosopher's Stone. You can use it to turn lead into gold, and it's make the elixir of life, and it's one of the greatest treasures in the world." And they're like, "You're crazy. Go away." I was like, I admire someone who can get out of a situation by telling the truth, but making other people think they're lying.
Yeah, and then when they run into the other tribe, and he's like, "Well, we'll give you this money if you give us 3 days, and then the boy will show that he can turn himself into the wind."
Right.
And then it is kind of funny, if you want to read it that way, when the boy's like, "What if I can't turn myself into the wind?" And he's like, "I can turn myself into the wind, so..."
Right.
Kind of like, almost like a, "I don't really care if you figure it out" moment.
He was kind of hiding him. He was kind of staying in hiding by doing that, too. He says, "Oh, this boy is a sorcerer." And never mentioned to them that, oh, well, I guess that was his backup plan. If they killed him, he would turn himself into the wind, and they'd go, "Oh, crap."
Yeah. Suckers! Except he would never say that. But.
Well, you know. But he carries a sword and rides a badass horse and dresses in, I like that, scary desert gear.
Yeah, like, so.
And he has a falcon.
Yeah. Falcons are awesome.
That's right.
He's like that guy in The Mummy. The Magi. What's his face? He's a falcon.
I see where you're going.
Damn it. I couldn't help but actually think of The Mummy several times while reading this, because they're going to Egypt and you have the Englishman.
Right.
The...
Also fair enough.
Although that movie's selling.
Santiago is searching for his treasure in Egypt. Was it Brendan Fraser's career? he's trying to unearth that thing.
That's the real treasure. Yeah, and then other than the alchemist, a lot of the other characters, I should say a lot of the other male characters in the book, serve as either inspiration for Santiago to move forward or an example of some different type of person for him. So, like, the King of Salem, for example, is the guy who convinces him that he should go seek his personal legend.
Because right.
He's, like, some kind of weird god-type messenger person.
Yeah, he's some sort of sage angel.
Yeah.
A sage angel?
The merchant who sells crystal has become complacent and is comfortable with his life and doesn't want to pursue his personal legend anymore because it's too hard.
He's accepted mediocrity because it's easy, basically. Yeah.
So, and then Santiago convinces him to continue to expand and grow.
And he does it, and despite not wanting to do
it. Yeah. The Englishman who is searching for the secrets of alchemy and driving toward his own legend, and he's the book-learning fella.
Yeah. And then there's the camel driver, member of the caravan. Another character who it seems like in a more adventure-oriented story might be more interesting, but he's the grizzled veteran who has pretty much accepted his life.
Uh-huh.
And so has lots of good worldly advice.
Yeah. Living in the present, not worrying about things, all that stuff. And that's essentially what all those guys are for, to inspire Santiago or teach him a lesson about the world. And they're not really there to, like, be their own characters.
Right. You know, it occurs to me we left a character off the list.
Oh, really?
A female character. The gypsy woman.
Oh, yeah.
Who stakes her claim to 10% of his treasure before he even leaves.
Because she interprets his dream.
Yeah. Though, I think it was a little bit of a scam. She says, let me interpret your dream. And he's like, I'm dreaming of the pyramids. You have to go to Egypt. I'm like, really? You need an interpreter for that?
Yeah, I know. That's all she did. If you find a treasure there, I get a tenth of it for telling you that.
She must take a shot in the dark like that 6 times a day. It's like, it means this. If you find treasure, you have to share it with me. And then just knows that the people who are big enough suckers to come visit her are going to be big enough suckers to come back with treasure if they ever find it.
Well, at the end of the book, he totally goes, I have to go to the gypsy woman first, yep. Give her a tenth of this, and then I can go find Fatima, so...
It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy sort of deal, too, because if you tell a really earnest person who's out to seek their fortune, go here, but you have to share 10% of your treasure with me. Like, if they get treasure any time in the next... I don't know, like 5 years, they're going to be like, the gypsy woman.
I'm like, screw that gypsy woman. She's just trying to get me out of her house. Keeping it.
That's right.
I wonder if you don't keep your promise, though, of something. Like, if the omens will tell you you're a bad person or something.
They probably will. Stupid omens.
So I guess I was wrong when I was going to claim that there was only one female character in the book, because there are two, as Ben just pointed out.
I know, I realized that was going to rain on your parade to some degree.
Not too much.
Yeah.
So the feminist issue here is, first of all, that there aren't that many women, mostly dudes. And Fatima, who ends up being Santiago's love at first sight woman.
Yes.
So, you know, he sees her at the oasis, looks into her eyes, they speak the universal language to each other in silence, and he realizes that they're in love or something.
Yeah.
just, you know, your typical, oh, I see her, I must wed her sort of deal.
And I thought that this book read kind of like a fairy tale with its pretty linear progression and very blatant message.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely a form of storytelling where love at first sight is a thing.
Yeah.
In more sophisticated, probably isn't fair, but let's just say more sophisticated fiction. That
complex fiction?
It happens less often just because I think most of us don't think that's a thing, or at least only hope it's a thing.
I think a lot of people think it's a thing.
I know, I say that knowing people who think it's a thing.
Yeah, I've heard tales,
yep,
of people who think it's a thing. I don't. But
I don't either. I don't know, human beings are never going to be rational, so.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could see someone in a room and be like, ooh, they're really cute. And then they think you're really cute, and then it happens that you're super compatible, so you like each other really fast.
Doesn't...
And you could write that off as love at first sight if you
want to. Doesn't, like, every single person have a grandparent or something who, like, the first time I saw your grandmother, I said, that's the woman I'm gonna marry.
Yeah, totally. One of our little brother's friends walked into a coffee shop once, apparently saw a girl there, and, I'm gonna marry that girl! And they dated for a really short amount of time and got engaged super fast because of that. Love at first sight thing, broke up like a year later. Because they were 18.
Right.
And realized that that's stupid. And his friend's crazy, so. And there's... Not that I'm saying you're crazy if you fall in love at first sight. I'm just saying, maybe take a little grain of salt. Because I'm pretty impressed that when Santiago walks up to Fatima the day after he meets her and says, I want you to be my wife, I can't believe she doesn't, like, run away screaming.
See,
like,
that,
oh,
that,
God.
That seems like the more common reaction to that statement.
I'd be like, who are you? But the main beef I have with Fatima is that her personal legend is apparently Santiago. He doesn't want to go into the pyramids because he wants to stay and marry her and everything. And the alchemist is telling him, no, you know, desert women are used to waiting for their men to come back. And if they die, then that's their role, which I also kind of have issues with. But skip over it for now. And, you know, if your love is true love, then it'll be fine. And he's like, okay, well, if I go off, what about her? And he's like, well, duh, she met you, and her personal legend is you. And I was like, really? So, like, all these guys in passing that we hear about in the story, their personal legends are to, like, go off and travel and make money and stuff, and then the one woman, her personal legend is to fall in love with a dude. Thanks for that!
All right, now I'm going to make a half-hearted attempt to justify this, okay. And then you will feminist slap it.
Okay.
All right. So, what if her personal legend is Santiago, because he's going to achieve his personal legend so early in life that she's going to become the power behind the throne and manipulate him behind the scenes into forming this giant, like, business empire that she's actually running? Does that make it okay?
That's not her personality at all, though.
Maybe it is. We don't even know her.
That's true.
Her personality is she gets stuff from the well. Presumably water.
If she was, like, unhappy at the Oasis, and her personal legend was to travel, and the only way she could travel was to marry a guy who traveled because it's, you know, the 1800s and people are sexist. And
right.
So her real personal legend is to see the world, and the only way she can do that is by marrying a guy who also wants to see the world. Then I guess, like, in the context of society, you could actually make it not be that bad. But then when she's like, I'll just wait for you for years and years and years and hope you come back, like, way to have zero agency.
Oh, my scenario is not what's happening. Just to be clear to the listener.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, so how would you twist this so maybe it would be okay?
But then her personal legend wouldn't be him. It would be, like, something way bigger than him.
Well, fair enough.
I think her personal legend is probably babies.
Well, probably. Her personal legend is banging. She can't do that unless she's married.
She's hot. She needs to fuck.
That's right.
Also not a thing, because they, like, don't even do anything.
They don't have sexual thoughts.
They kiss once.
A kiss comes along the wind, I think.
Moving on.
Yes. So, I mean, as long as we're at it, sounds like we're into issues now.
Yeah.
We have segued.
Oh, yeah.
The book is basically a giant spiritual thread.
Yeah.
So, it raises issues in the sense of when you're reading it, you decide if you're okay with that, if you buy into that.
Yeah, if you buy into the spirituality, or if you think it's BS. And if you don't buy into the spirituality, we should mention, then the book doesn't really have anything for you, because that's the point of the book, is the spirituality.
Yeah, my only tweet for this book, because I couldn't think of anything to say about most of it, because I don't know, what, like, it's not a book you can snark at very easily in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Was that it felt like a combination of mysticism and motivational speaking. And, I mean, it really does, because yeah. It's just all this, oh, well, if you want it, the universe will help you to find it, and speak to your heart, and then you can understand the soul of the world, and if you do that, that unlocks great power and understanding.
Uh-huh. And the true alchemy is listening to the world and seeing the omens, and...
Yeah.
Like, there are signs all around you.
And there are some messages buried in there that I think can apply without needing to have all the mysticism. The main one being stop being a spineless wimp and just make decisions.
Yeah, try to go do something interesting.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's kind of the... I think if you wanted to interpret the book kind of as like a series of little cusp moments, you could almost do that, where he has to decide to take the next step forward.
Yeah, like by selling the flock.
Mm-hmm.
And then leaving the crystal shop.
Uh-huh. And leaving the oasis. And it's always having to leave something behind, mm-hmm, to keep moving forward. So, I mean, there is an element of that in there as well. It's just a lot of mumbo jumbo around it to get there, is what I would argue.
And then he has a conversation with the desert, and then the wind, yeah, and then the sun, and then...
Yes.
And then you're like, what is happening? Actually, I thought that scene could have been way cooler, because it totally turned into just one of those, like, desert, do you know the meaning of love and alchemy? And then the desert's like, I do not know love. And
yeah.
it turned into one of those types of things where I was like, eh. Like, it felt like he was just lecturing these,
right,
like, weird things. And I was like, I don't know about this. Like, those, I don't know how to describe that type of conversation, but when I run into those types of conversation, I'm always like, I don't want to read this, because you're just going to say the same shit, like, 100 times.
Right. Well, it's like a certain flavor of parable, maybe.
Yeah.
He went to the desert for help, and the desert couldn't help him, because, and it said, go to the wind. So he went to the wind, and the wind said, oh, I'm not powerful enough, you'll have to talk to the sun. And he went to talk to the sun, and the sun said, oh, well, I don't know how to do that either, you'll have to talk to...
God, essentially.
God, yeah. And then God says, I am mysterious, because I am God. End of parable. You're the wind now.
You're the wind. P.S. You're the wind now. Something like that. I guess we should mention, though, that the spirituality is tied into this, like, universal truth and being and God. They mention God several times, but it's definitely not like a lecture on Christianity or anything. Santiago himself believes in Jesus, but then, like, a lot of the other characters are Muslim, and there never really seems to be any judgments drawn about what type of religion you are, as long as you're plugging into this universal spirituality.
Yeah, I mean, spirituality is definitely the key word for this book. It's not a specific... It's not really a specific flavor of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, oh, there are bigger things that if you open yourself to, you can be part of.
Yeah.
And they'll help you. And, I mean, there are even some, like, animistic ideas in there. Like, everything, like, every rock, every tree,
right,
every sheep, whatever has a soul. Right.
Uh-huh.
And that you can communicate with these souls, even the soul of the rock.
Right.
And that's... certainly not an especially monotheist idea.
No. But sometimes when, you know, a book has a lot of God in it, it's because it's pushing a certain, religion.
Right.
This one's just more pushing the idea of, like, tapping into the world and the universe helping you, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Becoming one with everything or whatever.
Right.
Becoming Neo from the Matrix.
Yeah. All
right. Themes.
Listen to your heart.
Yeah, that becomes a big... The Alchemist tells him he has to listen to his heart, and you get an entire... I don't call it chapter. There aren't really chapter breaks, but... He goes and listens to his heart and comes back to the alchemist and says, my heart's thinking about this.
Yeah.
And he's like, great, your heart's trying to tell you whatever. And he goes back, my heart's afraid. Tell your heart not to be afraid.
Yeah.
My heart's trying to betray me. If you know your heart, it will never betray you. I was like, what is happening? And then he's like best friends with his heart.
Yeah, he actually talks. He listens to his heart and he talks to it. They have actual conversations.
Yes, this isn't like a metaphorical... No, he's literally talking to his heart. So we should have listed the heart as a character, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
But, yeah, this theme of listening to your heart, because your heart taps into the soul of the universe, and when you become one with your heart, you can tap into that. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Follow your own personal legend.
Well, okay.
Is a theme.
There's the whole book in a nutshell. That could have been the accurate to the book plot synopsis.
Yeah.
Just follow your personal legend.
And then something, I guess, basically the same, but a little different. Take risks. So, you know, don't become complacent. If you have a dream, don't be afraid to follow it, even if you have to leave stuff behind.
That's the practical message.
Yeah.
If you want something, you have to keep chasing it. Which, yeah, you know, I can see that. You don't need a mystical approach to get there. I think of, novelists are actually a good example, because a lot of them are a little bit older when they finally find success. You know, like 40 instead of 23 and fresh out of college, something like that.
Most. When I've written how many books and plays and, you know, haven't gotten anywhere yet.
Right.
So, yeah. I think that's a pretty good comparison.
Yeah.
And then one thing I just wanted to mention, I did mention it earlier, but this idea of omens and seeing signs in the world around you. Santiago has to tap into that as well to follow his legend, and it makes him kind of he can see, like, he's in the oasis and he sees a hawk attack another hawk and says, oh, the hawks are warning me that a warrior tribe is on its way here, and then goes and warns the council of the oasis, and they all listen to him and believe him because they're all so used to looking for omens in the desert. And it's like the whole society that buys into the idea of the omens around you, and you have to pay attention to them and listen to what they say.
Yeah, and they compare him to Joseph and the Pharaoh.
Yeah.
Without calling it that.
And then someone says something like, an omen is when God wants to change the future or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to pay attention and...
Right. Or, like, he'll only show you a future that can be changed.
Yeah.
Something along... I think someone said basically that at one point. Yeah, what do you call a person who can do that? I mean, I guess it depends on the culture. Shaman?
Soothsayer?
Medicine man?
But he's basically doing that.
Yeah.
And I just, like, it kind of amused me that everyone was just like, oh yeah, you have to pay attention to those omens. Because in real life, you would have at least one person like, whatever.
Right. And it would totally be us.
Like, if someone came up to me and was like, look for omens on, you know, a sign or what school you should go to, I'd be like, No.
How about I research which school is best for
you? Which one sounds the best and which one I can get the best scholarship to? What are you talking about? Be one of those naysayers.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a wet blanket if you're an omen person.
That's one reason the classical Romans wouldn't like us very much.
Oh, that's probably true.
They were fans of the omens.
It's okay, we could pretend for them.
Okay. Anything else to say before we move into strengths and weaknesses?
Another thing that I kind of remembered while we were talking was that little story from the very beginning of the book. Do you remember the introduction?
Oh, the Narcissus?
Yeah.
Story?
the little prologue?
Uh-huh.
It was the typical story of Narcissus, but then the nymphs, I guess, asked the
lake...
what it thought, and it was sad, not because Narcissus had been visiting it, but because it could see itself reflected in Narcissus's eyes and liked how beautiful it was.
Yeah.
And the alchemist thinks, what a beautiful story.
Yeah.
I was like, what am I being set up for here?
Yeah, and just in case anyone doesn't know, the myth of Narcissus is this really hot dude who sees his reflection in a lake and is like, oh, damn, that guy is hot, and stares at himself for so long that he, like, wastes away and dies. And that's actually how the Echo was born, because the nymph Echo, who's in love with him,
right,
was repeating, yeah. And then apparently the lake was doing the same thing as Narcissus, and it's sad, because now it can't see its beauty anymore.
No, a lake can't go find something to stare into. Someone bring that poor lake a mirror. I feel bad for the lake. Okay, that was all I wanted to say.
Is it you can only see your beauty reflected through somebody else? But does Santiago do that?
I guess that could be the message, yeah. Does Santiago do that? I don't think so. I think he sees his beauty reflected through himself.
Yeah.
As he figures things out one step at a time.
Maybe it's that you kind of have to become enamored with yourself to follow your own personal legend.
That could be it, I suppose.
Because you do kind of have to be dedicated to you, since him staying behind for Fatima would have been bad for him.
Yeah.
But I think some people would argue that sometimes you do have to make sacrifices for other people at your own expense.
Yeah. I guess my favorite flavor of alchemist is just a different type.
Strengths and weaknesses. Nothing is really unnecessary because the book is so short.
Yeah.
And like we said, you don't really have time to hate it because it is so short.
I mean, if you were going to say, well, this was unnecessary, then the whole thing is unnecessary.
Yeah.
Which, if you argued, I wouldn't necessarily blame you, but there's... Yeah, there. I mean, it's not a needs editing situation. It's a taste situation there. The prose itself is, you mentioned earlier, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Very short. It actually does have that in common with The Road, too, I guess. it's definitely... I mean, I thought it was... I felt like the translation was probably good.
Yeah, I mean, not knowing how to read Portuguese.
Yeah, I mean, it was, again, it was more of a content situation than a prose situation.
I didn't really feel like it was very good fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was basically no character development, and the story was essentially just a metaphor.
Right.
And I tend to like fiction
right.
as, like, you know, character-driven stories. So I think in that regard, it's not necessarily a great book if you're wanting to read just, like, a good story with...
Well, let me lay out a plot synopsis for you and just imagine the type of story that you think is being told. A shepherd sells his sheep, sails from Spain to North Africa, learns the new culture he's in, joins a caravan crossing the desert, stops at an oasis in the middle of a war zone, and then eventually makes his way to see the pyramids. While under the tutelage of a master alchemist. I'm imagining an adventure story.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think that's what I wanted
yeah.
to happen. Even knowing going in that that's not what was going to happen. Because I actually did read this several years ago.
I never had, so. I just went into it. Questions?
I wanted to know what happens to Santiago after he achieves his personal legend.
He's so... He's like 20 or something?
Yeah, he's this young dude, and he has treasure and a wife, and no goals left in life, apparently.
Yeah, does he get a new personal legend?
Yeah, does he get a new one? Does he use his treasure to become a merchant and... trade camels and stuff like the alchemist said he would do with the oasis?
Yeah, does he become a counselor for the tribe there and continue to read omens and listen to his heart?
Does he become a sage like the alchemist and just go someplace, find some place to hole up and just watch things?
what's his deal?
Yeah, what's
does
up?
Does he keep traveling?
What's up with that?
We also want to know if the Englishman ever discovers alchemy the way he wanted to.
Yeah, like, if it's all about achieving your own personal legend, there's probably more than one path to get there, right? So maybe there is a lab-based way to discover alchemy and not just a, oh, well, I spoke to my heart.
You learn it on the journey. And then I also wanted to know why this book is an international bestseller.
Saw we.
It's just not that interesting.
It's just one of those inspirational things. Self-help books usually sell well. Maybe it's part, I don't know, motivational, inspirational stuff does well.
It does.
And I don't know why, because it's not my personality, but I know that some people find it actually inspirational.
Yeah, I mean, that must really be the thing. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of asking that as a jerk, as opposed to, like, a legitimate
well, yeah,
pondering.
I understood that, but I was seeing, like, a chicken soup for the soul kind of thing, where some people go, oh, they're such heartwarming stories. I'm like, this is maudlin sentimental crap.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of Mitch Albom's stuff, Tuesdays with Maury, and Five People You Meet in Heaven, which I've been recommended to read multiple times and is a horrible, horrible piece of work.
Tuesdays with Maury sounds far more interesting than Five People You Meet in Heaven.
Tuesdays with Maury is also awful.
Oh, no. Okay.
I mean, a lot of people are going to get mad at me for saying that, because those were books that were really popular, too.
Well, Five People Meet in Heaven.
And very inspirational.
I'd say Five People Meet in Heaven never sound interesting to me.
But, it's kind of in the same vein, where, like, people just really like being lifted up and, like, they can go out and conquer, I think, so.
I see.
Okay, so verdict.
I couldn't help but feel like it was bullshit the whole time I was reading it, which is not surprising, because that's generally the way I feel when I listen to either a mystic or a motivational speaker talk. getting those two things blended together in book form didn't really make the message interesting to me.
Yeah, I think I'm too cynical to, I kept getting annoyed, like, Thaddeus' personal legend is a book. But then other than that, I thought it was not that interesting, and I was glad it was really short, because if it had been 100 pages longer, I would have had to slog a lot harder through it.
If this was a 300-page book, we would have hated it rather than found it just kind of mildly distasteful.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, we've talked about this a little bit before. We both tend to like books with characters that are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, well, we both like really good world building. I even get borderline obsessive with good world building at times.
Ben can be more enamored with good world building than me.
Yeah, if you give me no characters and an amazing universe, I can stay checked in for a couple hundred pages longer than Gabs can. But no, I mean, this book isn't really designed for those things, and
no.
Spirituality is, well, basically not a component of my life. So, I'm just not sure what to do with it.
I actually was gonna say when I finished it that I kind of felt like Hermione, because I feel like if Hermione read this book, she'd be like, ugh, sounds like Trelawney wrote this crap.
Yeah,
for
that's
omens
right.
Everywhere. Stupid.
Hilarious.
Push it very Hermione.
Yes. So what you're reading right now?
I'm still working on The Emancipator's Wife by Barbara Hambly. It is like 650 pages.
Because it's big.
Yeah, I'm over 300 into it. Lincoln's about to get elected president,
All right.
I'm just moving right along, but so yeah.
650 pages of nonfiction is usually denser than a 650-page novel, too.
Oh, it's fiction.
Oh, it is fiction.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it shows what I know.
Sorry. Well, I guess I'm just describing it like as being about Mary Tyler.
Yeah,
I really tell you that it's fiction.
I assumed it was a biography.
No, it is making me want to read a biography of her really bad, though. I'm like, how much of this is bullshit and how much is real?
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm reading some nonfiction, damn it. I'm reading The Winds of Change by Frank L. Battisti, which is probably the nerdiest book I've read since we started this podcast. It is about the evolution of the modern wind band. Yes. Though in the conducting part of the music world, I gather it's one of those things that almost everybody is familiar with, especially on the band side.
Mm.
In fact, I think I was told to buy it for a class, and then we never used it in class.
Oh.
I kept it because I knew it was significant, so I finally dusted it off, and now I'm reading it. I figure, if nothing else, I will get a very good listening list from it.
Yeah.
Because the early part of the book is talking about a lot of really standard repertoire, and I'm familiar with the majority of it, and it's really good stuff. So I will listen to the stuff I don't know and find out if I like it too. My guess is, yes, I will, because I'm a nerd. All right, so anyway, if you have questions, comments, if you want to see my listening list, you know, you can leave a comment on our website, www.novelideaspodcast.com.
You can shoot us an email at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
You can tweet us at @novelideaspod.
And you can find us on iTunes.
Yeah, and if you find us on iTunes, rate, review, comment, whatever it is iTunes lets you do. Supposedly it helps us. If more than 15 people ever listen to this, maybe we'll see some. But hey, for the record, I'm not blaming the other 6 billion odd of you. I'm just saying. So next week,
yes,
we will be reading The Perks of Being a Wallflower by a name that we're going to take turns trying to pronounce.
Yeah. Stephen Chbosky?
Chbosky! Chbosky.
It's Chbosky.
Silent C-H. Bosky.
So if anyone has any insight into that, please help us.
I think it's funny that we were on the internet looking up how to pronounce Paulo Coelho's name, and then we looked up who wrote Perks of Being a Wallflower, we like, but didn't bother to look up how to pronounce his name.
Chbosky. Yeah, good enough.
Shabotnik.
We'll look it up for next time.
Chbosky.
That'll just be our thing every week. Yeah. I should point out, The Perks of Being a Wallflower is going to round out Bestseller Month and at the same time start our next theme month.
That's right. Our next theme month is Banned Book Month.
Which we had a really good time with last year.
Yeah, we really enjoyed that. We like banned books. Actually, I kind of the opinion that if a book is banned, that's a sign of its quality.
It's probably pretty good.
In general, that seems to be true. There are probably exceptions, but I haven't really read the exceptions too often. That's what we'll be doing. That would actually be a good thing to send us a suggestion for.
Yeah, a good banned book you're interested in.
It's not hard to find banned books, so we don't need lots of help with that, but if you have a favorite, then definitely we'd be interested.
Yep.
So that'll do it this week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
So tell me what you gonna do.
I'm gonna listen to my heart.
Oh, buddy, it's my big debut.
I'm gonna